Investment banking is the hunter-gatherers. They go out and they do a deal. You know, they kill something, they eat. Investment management is much more agricultural.
Today, my guest is David Nichols. He's been in Japan for, you said about 17, 16?
About 25 years.
25 years now.
Yeah.
25 years. And we're going to get to find out about his life starting from David. Where were you born?
I was born in Group Health Hospital in Seattle, Washington.
Seattle, Washington?
Yeah.
Okay. And you grew up there? How long did you stay there throughout your life?
Through college. I went to the University of Washington, so until I was 22, I was in the Seattle area.
Okay. Oh, I've gone there once because Boeing has a big plant there.
Yeah.
And so does Precor that makes fitness equipment. Tell me this. When you were a little kid, would you consider yourself more academic or more sports-minded?
Probably more academic. I'm pretty bad at sports.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have siblings?
Yes, I have two brothers. I'm the middle son.
That's interesting. So, what are your brothers? Are you close with your brothers?
Pretty close. Yeah. They're both still in Seattle area, and we were really able to manage our parents passing well together.
Both your parents passed at the same time?
No, they passed at different times, but it was great because we all couldn't do some things, and someone else could do it. So it was sort of a portfolio of making sure that we took care of our parents and took care of everything as it happened.
Oh, how long ago was that?
My father passed away in 2004, my mother in 2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, they stayed married the whole time?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
I heard someone told me recently, they said a successful marriage is when one partner watches the other pass. That's a successful marriage. If you've been in long enough to
yep.
watch your spouse pass, that's successful.
Yeah,
has to
yeah.
do it.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely had a successful marriage.
How many years between you and your oldest?
About 13 or 14 months.
And your youngest?
18 months.
Your father's not Irish, is he?
No. But he really liked babies, so he wanted to have a lot. And my mother just said no.
She cut it off at three.
three in diapers, that's enough.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Where was your father from?
He's from Everett, Washington.
Okay.
So just north of Seattle.
And your mother?
She's from Larchmont, New York.
Okay. From the East Coast to the West Coast, how did that happen?
So both of them taught for Department of Defense schools. So my father originally was teaching in Japan in Sendai for a year, and then Yokohama, and then he transferred to Germany. My mother taught in Germany. They met in Germany, got married, and moved to Italy to Vicenza for a year, where my older brother was born, and then came back to Washington State.
I'm just going to try to guess now. Is your father a Mormon?
No. No, no, no.
How old was your, I'm just curious, how old was he when he passed?
He was 75.
Okay, still kind of young.
Yeah.
He passed, yeah.
Yeah.
But older than me. He never did service time?
No, he was 4F. His okay. eyesight was not good. But so he taught for the military schools, for the Department of Defense schools.
But he would have been eligible for Vietnam, right?
No, he graduated from college in 48. So in the early 50s, he was here in Sendai in Yokohama.
Okay.
And late 50s, he was in Germany. In 1960, my brother was born in 61 in Italy, so they came back to Seattle in 62.
Where you were born?
In 63, yeah. Yeah.
So what type of teacher would your father teach?
He was when I knew him, he was a history teacher. He started out teaching English, and to get a job in Los Angeles, his first job was in Los Angeles, he said he could teach Spanish, and so he did, but he said he was one lesson in front of the students. I know him as a history teacher.
And your mother?
She was an elementary school teacher.
Okay.
So I think first... kindergarten, first, and third.
So she had to cover all the subjects.
Yeah.
Because you had the students for everything.
Right, right.
It's interesting. So they read to you a lot. They made sure all of their sons had real good reading skills.
Yes.
Their academics had to be good, basically.
Yes.
Right. Were they strict about it, or was it just something that's just the way it was?
Sort of in between. There were... as long as we were doing it, they weren't strict, but if we started to slip, they let us know that we weren't meeting their expectations.
Okay. Did either of them come from a big family, or?
Yes, they both did. My father had, I think, 4 brothers and 1 sister, and my mother had 3 sisters and a brother.
Where did they rank?
They were both sort of in the middle.
Like you?
Yeah.
So they could really identify with you, I'm sure, with having one above you and one below you.
Yeah, I think so. What happened, so my mother had a great idea when we turned 20. She would collect all the pictures she had of us and put together a huge board with just all kinds of pictures of us growing up.
In no particular order?
No. But when she did mine, what they noticed is the middle kid, they just didn't take a lot of pictures of me. So she had to put in some of my brothers to fill it in.
That's right. That happens.
Yeah.
Now, you have how many kids? You said you have...
I have two sons.
Two sons. Okay.
Yes.
What are their ages now?
They are 29 and 25.
29 and 25. Are they close?
Not really, no. They're very independent.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're saying that your oldest is studying to become a doctor?
Yes.
What type of doctor?
He's a medical doctor. Based on his background, I think he would make a great trauma surgeon, emergency room surgeon, because when he graduated from ASIJ and joined the Army as a combat medic, and he did that for 4 years, and then he became a Seattle police officer for another 4 years, and now once he got his undergraduate degree through the GI Bill, he went back into the Army and is doing medical school.
That's wonderful. That is beautiful. Is he married?
No.
Okay, you said that as if he's about to become.
No, I'm not sure.
You're not sure. That was the hesitation I saw there. Okay.
Yeah.
And your youngest?
He is a chemical engineer in Richland, Washington. So he's working at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, cleaning up nuclear waste.
How's he feeling about that?
He's liking it. It's a new program where they're trying to they call it vitrification. They're trying to take the liquid waste and encase it in glass to make it more stable for storage. Mm-hmm. But while he was in college, he had a part-time job at a nuclear reactor, so he got a nuclear plant operator certificate. And I think the combination of the chemical engineering and the nuclear background helped him get the job.
That is beautiful. That tells me one thing for sure, is that you and your wife did a great job with your kids. But you received an award. I'm kind of jumping all around,
yep.
And then I'm going to take you through your life. But you received the highest award you can get for the Boy Scouts.
So when I was a youth, I was Eagle Scout, which is the highest youth
right.
award. And then when my son was doing Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts, I was the PAC committee chairman of the American Club PAC 51. And then I was a scoutmaster for Troop 51 I think I did that for 5 years, and you should probably only do it for 2. But
nobody else basically wanted to go into it? Or
yeah, until I just said I can't
right.
do it anymore. But then I was looking forward to just kind of stepping back and being supportive, and I had a conversation with the Far East Council scout executive about something about finance, and the next thing I know, I'm the treasurer. And then after that, they said, oh, and of course you can be the president. So I was president of the Far East Council for, again, 5 years. And again, 2 years is probably the right amount of time.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. But the Boy Scouts of America have gone through a bankruptcy to settle some past abuse claims. Mm-hmm. And it was the council felt that I should probably stay in place to make sure, for continuity, to make sure things got settled.
And the finances stayed.
Yeah.
Yeah, in line with what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's good. That's interesting. So let's go through elementary school. So you were really academic in elementary school. That followed through. You weren't so good in sports.
Yeah.
But you were a Boy Scout in elementary?
Cub Scout in elementary, and
Cub Scout
then and then Boy Scouts after that. And I did, I mean, I did do sports, but
you
I just
had
wasn't
to.
Good. Yeah, well, yeah, that was kind of the expectations. Okay, fall, what sport are you going to do? Winter, what sport are you going to do? Spring, and it didn't. There was no expectation that I'd be good. It's just that I do it.
You had to do it,
which is good. Yeah, because
you could be a part of the team, but you didn't have to be one of the stars.
No, no. Yeah, and so I did cross country swimming and track, and I knew that I just couldn't not. I'm not a good sprinter, so I just did the distance stuff.
Okay. What about your brothers?
My brothers were much better athletes than me. They were wrestlers.
Okay.
And my younger brother in particular, he was a very good runner. I think 4:40 dash, and he went to district and things like that. But and I got to watch.
So you'd go to all of his meets so you could see what he was doing.
Some. I do. My claim to fame with sports is I was the only one on my team, or only one in our district, to get disqualified in the mile run.
For what?
Some guy tried to come up on me, and I just started elbowing him.
Yeah, right.
You know, because he passed me first, and he didn't give me enough room, so I passed him, and you know.
And the temper came out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The so Nichols temper, is that something that's known in that area?
No, but also I didn't have much to lose. I mean, you know, I wasn't going to win the race, so.
All right, so then you got from elementary to junior high, then in high school, what did you start to focus in on?
So high school, elementary, high school, Boy Scouts was a big part of my life. I got my Eagle Scout fairly early, and then I spent a couple summers staffing at a summer camp on the Hood Canal in Washington State. So there I was able to teach aquatics. In high school, my part-time job was lifeguarding and swim instructing.
My goodness. What's one of the models for the Boy Scouts at the bottom of the hill? What, do it, get it done, or not so much?
Do a good turn daily, or be prepared.
Right, be prepared.
Yeah.
Be prepared. So do you feel that you've really lived your life keeping that in the back of your mind all the time?
Yes, I think so. I try to make sure that I can be self-reliant or know where help is if I need it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't mean to pass over, but your wife, what does she do?
She is a homemaker, but you know, so she's raised the family.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Now, when you finished high school and then you went into college, what did you go into college to study?
International studies with a focus on Western Europe.
Okay, why? Why so?
Because I was really interested in history and political science. And in the early 80s, it was all about NATO versus Warsaw. And so that was very interesting to me. So I studied French. And focused on, at that time, it was the assumption was that there was going to be a war between Warsaw and NATO, and how do you keep it from being nuclear? So that was really sort of the theme of what we focused on in Western Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It is sort of amazing, but it was all about war's going to happen, and how do we keep it from not getting nuclear?
What was that?
Yeah.
So what did you graduate with?
I got a BA in international studies, and I realized that I have an international studies degree, and I really have only been to Canada, so I should travel.
Okay.
So I thought, well, I don't have a lot of money, and the easiest thing to do is I want to get to Europe, but I'll get a job in Japan, teach English for a year, save my money, and then go to Europe.
What made you think about Japan?
Probably a part of it was Seattle's proximity to Japan, and then my father had lived in Japan,
right,
and always had good memories of it. Realistically, there wasn't a lot of thought that went into it. I just thought, well, it'd be a good thing to do, one, to just get away from familiar situations, put myself into something unfamiliar, and that's one fairly feasible way to do it.
One more question, David. Did your brothers, both of your brothers, go into Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, Eagle Scouts?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Your family, what about your father? Was he involved too?
Yes, when he was a youth, he didn't do much, but as an adult, yeah, he was very active in supporting the troop. And my mother was the den mother for the pack.
Wow. So your boys also, they all had to do that, of course. Both of your boys went through.
My older one went through Cub Scouts, yeah, and then the younger one went through Boy Scouts, and then he got interested in wrestling.
Okay, so that ended that. So you come over to Japan to teach English. How did that go? And who'd you come over with? Was it a group like?
No, it was. There was an ad in the Seattle Times for a local Eikaiwa in Yamaguchi Prefecture. So I just answered that, and my buddy from elementary school answered another ad, and we both ended up in the same town teaching for rival English schools.
What year is this?
This would have been end of 85. So
end of 85, okay.
Yeah.
So how did that go?
That went well. I tell everyone I'm on my 25th year of my one-year plan.
So you never left Japan after that?
No, I did. I've been back and forth a few times.
Okay.
So, first year went well, so I thought, well, I extended for another year. And then I thought, if I keep doing English teaching, it's really easy, and I'll never be able to get a real job.
So were you making good money? You
thought? It was good enough for me.
Right.
You know, I could save a little. I had enough to live on, and it just wasn't that hard. But I thought, it's good in your 20s, but after that, if you're kind of limited on your upside potential.
Right.
So I got a job with a Japanese food product company located in Imabari in Shikoku. And I thought there that, you know, I would, at the worst case, I'd learn a lot of Japanese. And best case is, you know, it might be a career thing. Turned out it was more close to the worst case. I'd learned a lot of Japanese. They transferred me to Los Angeles. They were opening up an office in Los Angeles.
Okay.
I did that for a couple of years, and then I decided, you know, I don't mind working hard, but I'd prefer to get paid more for it. So I went to business school. I went to UCLA.
Okay.
And got my MBA.
When you came, when they sent you to LA,
yeah.
You decided, did you let them go or did you do it?
Oh, no, I transferred with them and worked with them and then worked for another Japanese company for another year or two, a trading company. And I got to, it was very valuable to do that before going to business school because I understood how things can go wrong and how to evaluate where the opportunities were.
Okay. And you thought you really got to get a grasp on that when you went to UCLA?
Yeah, UCLA helped me sort of put the pieces together into a framework.
So did you have other people in the class that had been through something like that, or were you just basically one of the only ones that had done that?
No, UCLA was great because there were so many people that had such
business experience.
Real diverse experience, yeah.
Okay, so you weren't alone and you couldn't get up and say, well, I've actually done it already. And
Not even on the Japanese part, because there were a lot of Japanese students and other people that had worked in Japan. So yeah, I was one of the people.
Many.
Yeah,
that's interesting. That's really good. I would think so too, because you're right on the West Coast. You're right at UCLA, and
yeah,
you couldn't be any closer to Japan than that for the States.
Yeah,
basically, outside of Hawaii.
Right.
Anyway. So okay, so you finished there. Then what'd you do? What was your first job after you finished there?
First job was with Morgan Stanley in Japan in the finance department.
How'd you get that job?
A guy from Morgan Stanley was traveling to New York, and he stopped in L.A. and called up the career center at the UCLA and said, "Hey, does anyone want to interview?" So I said, "Yeah, I'd like to," and talked to him the interview went really well, and he said, "Okay, I'm going to have you come back to New York." And the next week, I got a reject letter from Morgan Stanley, and so I called him up. I said, "Hey, what happened? I thought the interview was great." And he said, "Oh, human resources made a mistake."
Oh, yeah, but your head was a load off your chest.
Yeah, so I went back to New York, interviewed, and this would have been in the spring, and then nothing happened. And then in the summer, this was summer of 92.
When you say nothing happened, what do you mean nothing happened?
They decided not to hire anyone for that position.
You mean that's after you go there? They flew you out. They flew you out there to New York
to do more interviews.
Okay. Oh, I thought it was for the job.
No.
That was just do more.
No, and then I graduated. I didn't have a job. So what I did is I got the American Chamber of Commerce directory, sent out about 200 letters to people saying I'm coming to Japan for a couple weeks. Can I interview? And I also sent a letter to this guy that I'm from Morgan Stanley. And he said, great. And so I think I had about 4 or 5 interviews every day that I was there. And I went every day I kept going back to Morgan Stanley, and it was, I like them, it seemed like they like me. And then I went home with still no offer. And then finally, like end of August, they called me up and said, oh, can you be in Brooklyn on Tuesday for training? I'm like, yes. So that's how it started with Morgan Stanley.
And how long of a time was that? I mean, from the initial, when he first talked to you, do you remember how many months was that? Was that about a month or a year? Did it take?
Oh, no. It took, I probably started talking to him in February, and I was hired in August. So
okay.
A good so 6 months.
Wow. And pins and needles all the time.
It was funny. When I first went to the first interview, my wife said to me, I have a feeling about this one.
You admit, wait, okay, now where did that come in? Because you slid that in real quick.
So when I was the second year of teaching English, I met my wife and we got married. And so she went with me to Los Angeles. And so we were in married student housing and, you know.
So you had a family, yeah, almost.
Yeah.
Just you and her.
Yeah.
When did you have your first son?
In 1994.
How many years after being married?
Would have been about 6 years.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So you were pretty solid by the time you decided to have a kid.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So anyway, so you went there, and then you got your letter.
So my wife says, "Oh, I feel something about. I feel good about this one," and then I got the second reject letter, which was the real one, where they said, "No, we're not hiring anybody," and so I thought, I'm not going to listen to what you say, but then when I got the job eventually in August, I said, oh, okay, you're right.
But it took a little bit of time.
It took a little bit of time. Yeah.
You had to have that Japanese gamma.
Yeah.
To realize it.
That was it, yeah.
Okay, so how long did you stay with Morgan Stanley?
I stayed there for 18 years. So I started in Tokyo office, and then in 92, in 96, 97, they transferred me to New York. And I was there until 2005, and they transferred me back.
Okay.
Yeah. And then in 2010, when Morgan Stanley Investment Management sold a chunk of their asset management business to Invesco, I went along with that deal.
Right. Now tell me, where does Terry come in?
So Terry's my dog. She was a Jack Russell mix, a shelter dog from New Jersey.
And she just passed away on December 2021.
21, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in 2005, 2005, my father had passed away in 2004, and my son was very close with my father. So I thought, well, okay, let's get a dog, just for the kids. So we got this dog, and then the next week, and this would have been 2005 in the spring, brought her home, and the next week I go into the office, and my manager said, hey, there's a position for CAO of investment management in Japan. Are you interested? You know, I just got a dog. And she said, yeah. And I said, well, if the company's willing to pay to transport the dog, then sure. And she said, yeah. So
you came over here in 2005?
Yep.
Okay. Were you in Ebisu Garden Place?
No. We were.
So Terry Porte was your boss?
No, because he was investment banking. I was investment management.
Okay, right.
Yes. Yeah, but Morgan Stanley moved to Ebisu in 96.
Right.
And I was the controller for that move.
Okay.
So I got to work very closely with Terry on that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Him and George Fisher.
He was on my board when I was president of the American Chamber. He was one of my governors.
Yep.
Yeah. So I know Terry very well.
Yeah, and I've always had good experiences working with Terry. Yeah, so I was in investment management. So we were where we were most impacted was on the money market funds. The liquidity in the market just locked up.
When Lehman's hit the wall.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I had
first it was Bears and Stearns.
Bear Stearns, yeah, and the Lehman. But all that sort of goes together.
Together, right?
But I had a my fixed income trader. She comes into my office and says, I can't even get a price quote for U.S. Treasuries.
What year was this?
This would have been 2008. Yeah, when everything just locked up, and people talk a lot about the reasoning why things happened. In what I saw was liquidity just locked up. There was no liquidity in the market, and that's what
brought it into it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So what'd you do then?
So we managed through that. We just kept going. And then in 2009, Morgan Stanley announced they were selling their Van Kampen business to Invesco Asset Management. And part of that deal was the Japanese equity manufacturing capability in Japan. So we had about 110 people in Japan, and I was told send 34 over to Invesco. So we did that, and I ended up being part of that.
Mm. Did you enjoy that work?
It was the investment management. It's very interesting. It's a very very different from investment banking. I always talk about investment banking is the hunter gatherers. They go out and they do a deal. You know, they kill something, they eat. Investment management is much more agricultural. You've got to grow. You've got to nurture your crops. Your revenue comes in an annuity stream, and if you don't do things in the right way, you can kill your business without knowing it.
Right, yeah. Right. Because it's not producing anything for you.
Right. Well, right. Your initial sale is really no revenue. The revenue you get is your annuity stream from taking management fees off the funds. And investment management, it's on the surface, it's the easiest business in the world. You give me your money, and I'll invest. I'll do the best I can. If I make money, I'll take my percent. If I lose money, I'll still take my percent. So what could be easier than that? The difficulty is the trust that you have to build up to get someone to give you the money.
So what are you doing right now?
So right now, in 2020, I left State Street and...
Oh yeah, how did it go? Okay, so from Morgan Stanley, where'd you go from there?
Stanley, I went to Invesco for about 3 years. Then I left Invesco and went to State Street Trust and Banking. And then they asked me to be the president of State Street Global Markets, the securities subsidiary. That was fun. They said, yeah, we want you to be the president over there, and we want you to move the businesses back into the trust bank. And
now, these aren't things you tried to pursue yourself at all, or did you want those positions?
I did, but it was really, my approach to career has been to look for something interesting that's going to be interesting for a couple years, and then stick my head up and look around and see, do I want to keep doing it, or do I want to do something else? I've never really had a master plan. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up.
Right, but your basic plan is that you'll give it a couple of years,
yep.
Do the best you can,
yep.
And you'll let people know that's what your plan is. You're not hiding it.
No.
They know that from the onset, basically.
Right. And it's really, I want to be useful, and I want to help people, and I want it to be interesting. So that has really been my goal.
So do you stay out of the politics? You try to stay out of the politics.
I try, but you can't.
I mean, in a way you can. They can tell that you're not. I don't see you as someone who'd be. That's not your forte.
No.
You'd rather leave that alone. And I think that's what makes you a good president.
Yeah. Well, and it's really just. Treating everyone the same. It doesn't matter who they are, whether they're higher than you or lower than you in the hierarchy. It doesn't matter. It just everyone deserves a level of respect. And the other thing I found out is you can learn something from everyone. When I was CAO at State Street, I used to gather my group. We do a monthly meeting on a Friday afternoon. And say, okay, we're not going to talk about business. We're going to talk about something else because it's Friday afternoon and who wants to? And so we did one session where we said, okay, let's go around and I want you to tell me about something you learned from someone in the company. I don't care what it is. Like, I learned how to change the water from the corporate services guy. That's enough. But the point is, you can learn anything from anyone.
Gotcha. Yeah. You think scouting helped you with that?
Yeah, it did a lot. The idea of servant leadership is very embedded into scouting. Mm-hmm. I am a better manager because of what I have done in scouting.
I think people can sense that. I think it's a vibration that goes along with people. Just like we find that in our pets and mm-hmm. stuff. Human beings have it, but we try to ignore that. And sometimes we look at the facade that's built because of their degree, the school they went to,
yeah.
or what it might be, and you forget to feel, how do you feel about this person?
Right, right.
You know, that's more important.
It is.
That's the trust part.
Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. Okay, so you go on from there. When you finished...
So I went over to Invesco for 3 years, and then the president of State Street Trust Bank, it's funny, his sons were the same age as my sons, and they did stuff together. So we were fairly good friends, and he said, hey, do you want to come over? And I said, yeah, it sounds like a good idea.
As what?
I was the CAO and deputy president.
Okay.
So I was my job was really to I describe a CAO job as you look at what the president should be doing, and you take everything else off his plate, and just do everything else.
That's interesting. Give me an example. What would that be, for example? That's really, I like hearing that.
So the president needs to focus on growing the business, setting the strategy. Doesn't need to focus on the compliance people that are not getting along with each other.
Gotcha. These cliques that are forming.
Right. Or just, you know, IT technology needs to work. And he doesn't need to worry about technology working. That's what I focus on.
Now, he's not even thinking like that, is he? Does he know what you're supposed to be doing, or does he?
He does, because we had an explicit conversation about that.
So he really knew what he would delegate to you?
Yes, he knew what he'd delegate to me, and I would tell him what I was taking off his plate. It felt like a partnership.
It had to be.
Yeah.
It would have to be, because it's so hard for people to see the bigger picture sometimes, and they keep on micromanaging.
Right.
And that's what he'd be doing every time he'd step into your plate.
Right.
That had to cross over sometimes, though, and you'd have to correct him and say, wait.
Yeah. But it was
not intentionally, but...
No, but it was always open, frank discussion. It was, I'm pretty sure we made each other better.
That's good. Yeah. That is so good. So where'd you go from there?
So then in 2020, I left and went to Ernst & Young to be Ernst & Young's strategy and consulting to focus on the financial services industry and bring business and strategic consulting services to them.
How long did you stay with them?
I'm still with them.
So that's what you're doing now?
Right.
In the same position?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Although... what I've started doing in the last year is teaching at Temple University. I'm doing managerial economics there.
With Matthew? He's the head, isn't he?
Yes. My closest contact is William Swinton.
So both of them have been on the podcast. Have
yes.
you seen their podcast?
Yes, I have. Yes.
That's why I'm getting all the Temple people. That is good.
Yeah, and then I'm also teaching a human resource management class at Jose University's MBA program.
At Jose's?
Yes.
How long have you been doing that?
That one actually just starts next week.
Oh, it's just so you haven't done it yet.
Yeah,
you're going to start next week.
I'm going to a faculty party tonight.
So you start tonight, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, so what do you see for your foreseeable future?
Well, my sons are independent. So
they're both not even here,
right?
Right.
So, right. My retirement savings have done okay through. So I'm ready to focus on where I can have the most impact and most fun.
Do you see yourself staying in Japan?
Yeah,
in a state there.
Yeah. Well, my wife sees me staying in Japan, so yes, there.
Do you think you'll stay in Tokyo?
Probably.
You like Tokyo?
Yeah. It's where my network is and my connections are, so yeah.
I've come to the same conclusion. And there's no other city in the world like this.
It is a really easy city to live in.
The more you travel, the more you appreciate it. Every time I leave, I'm happy to come back.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as I get on the plane, especially I like to fly JAL or ANA. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I get on the plane, I'm at home. You know, there's no other place I can think I'd want to be. Before I end the podcast, David, there's always a question I like to ask everyone. So if you watch them, you know what it is. Mm-hmm. If you could magically go back in time and meet the younger David and give him advice, what advice would you give him and how old would he be?
It'd probably be when late high school, college age, and it would be not to set limits, not to self-filter. I think I've had a lot of opportunities, but I think there's opportunities that I could have taken advantage of that I didn't because of all that. That's not for me. That's for smarter people. I probably maybe shouldn't have put those limits on myself.
Thank you, David. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want to thank all of you for watching and or listening to this podcast. And remember, it's all on loan, so continue to reach for the stars.
Because you're too blessed to be stressed.